She's young. I could be my shot at her.
I want to punch her in the face. Don't know why.
One of these days, I'm going to say, I understand. And you just say, thanks.
That's what she's telling me. She's telling me the guy sitting down is never going to get the girl on the dance floor.
What?
Some iteration of that.
Okay, like what?
Where the fuck are you?
I don't want to talk about this.
Ross, director of the upcoming Lumen Mud Shuffle, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio.
Hey, perfect. You're so good. You're natural. You could be you could be my guest host or my replacement host, like when I go on vacation, like Carson used to, or Gary Shandling used to fill in for Carson, or Joan Rivers.
Joan Rivers used to too.
Well, she was made the permanent guest host.
Yeah, but how cool would that have been if she would have got the show instead of Leno?
Right. Well, she would have.
Uh-huh. What happened?
I think she was first, even before Letterman, she would have gotten it. Well, she was offered while Carson was going on. He's had years ahead, and she was offered her own talk show opposite him, and she took it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And he never talked to her again, yeah.
Oh, wow. So there was a little bit of a blunder in there.
Well, I mean, it's a blunder if you're pissing off a very powerful opponent, but I mean, fuck you. It's a free country. Somebody offers you a show for millions of dollars. Why wouldn't you take it? It's like based on this idea that you would continue being a guest host or that you one day may get the Tonight Show. It could have still gone to Letterman or Leno. She wouldn't have known.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. The rest.
So I'm going to transition now into the formal intro, although this kind of stuff, I enjoy talking about anything that comes up,
Yeah, but see, that was like a good example of what our previous interview actually was like.
Right. So it's not inappropriate. We're giving an example of what you're about to listen to.
Right.
Well, we're talking to Frank V. Ross. Thanks for doing this. We're experimenting with me a little bit. I mean, I've actually done in the studio a few episodes where I did, I think one or two where I did intros with a couple of people, that were in the studio with me.
Mm-hmm.
But typically I do all these intros on my own for my show. But I just thought this particular episode that people are going to be listening to in a minute, it's been sitting on the shelf for was it last summer or was it the summer before? I can't remember.
I don't even know. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was too, because I think like shortly after I got back, I quit the restaurant.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did I encourage you to do that?
I don't know what the final straw was, but
you were fired, and that was it. Then you're like, "That's it, I quit."
No, or maybe it was, July 2016. I quit. I really don't remember. Time is just not my thing.
It's a hassle.
Yeah, but there was just you know what? It had to be 2016 because it was shortly after Trump announced.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Because I heard my boss say that he liked Trump, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't be in here. I can't listen to this shit. So I went home, and I just said to Carrie, like, what if it got a little tighter around here for a little while? And without even hesitating, she just said, okay.
Because
she knew what I meant and everything.
Because she saw you and how your soul was being eaten away at and how miserable, I guess, you felt. Or maybe it was just like a burden to you.
Yeah, it got bad. Like I was like hiding my drinking from her and stuff.
Oh, dear.
Driving home really? Drunk from the restaurant all the time. Just, it got bad.
Oh, so good. Good. What a supportive person.
Yeah. Yeah, she really is. She's irresponsible.
Well, if you don't have a kid, it's a lot easier to make that choice.
She's due April 12th.
What?
She's due April 12th.
Oh, my God, that's right. So this is your first child?
Yeah.
April 12th?
Yeah.
Wow, Frank, congratulations.
Thank you.
So this was your baby shower?
Yeah.
I thought you were... I wasn't
her work friends. Oh, okay. Her baby shower.
I wasn't sure. Like, a part of me thought, you mentioned, you know, that we could do this after the baby shower, and I wasn't sure. I was thinking, is it you guys? And
yeah. Yeah, usually it means, like, I was working one.
Catering.
Yeah.
So, do you know the sex of your child?
Yeah, it's a boy.
It is a boy. Frank W. Ross.
No, this is
in the lineage of Frank Ross's. He's like the 20th.
No, it was actually kind of weird, like, because my dad's name was Frank too, so I just assumed I was gonna name, if I had a boy, I was gonna name Frank. But then as soon as I found out it was a boy, I got really possessive of the name.
Is your dad around? I forget.
No, he died in 95.
That's a while ago. Gee, you were young.
I was 15.
Wow, that had to be really... Oh, geez, I'm going to go off on all this different... This is a show.
Yeah.
Now I'm rude because I'm saying, yeah, it's a good topic of conversation, but I want to do the intro. So you're describing how you lost your dad at maybe the most fragile period in your life, and I'm like, well, what can you do? On with the show.
On with the show.
That had to be really hard, though.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Man. Well, in a way... Naming your son after your dad, I mean, you know, there are worse things. But you probably have a name chosen, so that's great.
We have a name we've been calling him. It's definitely not Frank.
To be frank, yeah. Well, so a lot of changes have transpired. So you quit last summer, the job, and you've dedicated yourself to art making then full time? Is that what's going on? Or are you, what are you doing?
I've been writing a book, like a novel. And then I've been editor on two different features. I'll keep him busy.
Great. Keeping busy in Chicago.
Yeah.
And your child is due in just a couple of weeks. So you're going to do these screenings in Williamsburg of, is it a theatrical or just, is it a modified theatrical? Let's put it that way, right?
In Williamsburg there. I know definitely like the 27th and the 29th there's going to be screenings. I'm not sure.
And in Chicago, is it when does that take place?
That's the week of the 24th through the 30th of March.
Very good. So the same, during this, pretty much the same week, simultaneously.
Yeah.
And what theater in Chicago?
Facets Cinematheque.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great spot, right?
Yeah. I really like it.
Yeah.
I think this is the first week-long run I've ever had, actually.
Is that true?
Yeah. From what I can remember. And as you know, I don't remember things accurately all the time.
Okay, folks that are listening, we're going to go into a segment that Frank and I recorded last summer, early last summer. It's a rambling conversation, right? We can say that.
Yeah.
But it's fun. Before we're waiting in the car to get into your hotel room to record the conversation, which itself was already challenging because I had forgotten my equipment. Back home. And so the whole issue was, should we just do it since we're both free now, or do we try to figure out another time before you leave, which was going to be probably pretty quickly, I'm going to guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we just said, let's just do it with the iPhone. So there's a compromise quality in this on some level, but it's very, very audible. So we recommend you give it a listen. And the first thing is it's pouring torrentially when we arrive at your hotel. So we sit in the car. We said, let's just wait till it calms down a little bit. And then we notice across the other side of the street, there is a couple in the car going at it. And then we go into the hotel room. We record the following conversation. And we had just come off a big dinner. So we were rambling a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was nice. And so what did we talk? We talked about a whole bunch of different things, and you know, anyway. So that's what people are going to hear.
Yeah, it was a conversation without agenda.
It's true. Well, we do get to the film Blue and Mud Shuffle quite a bit, and as well as some of your other films. Also, we should mention you were in Brooklyn because you was it at Rooftop Films, right?
Yeah,
you were screening the film at Rooftop Films, which was the second time that we met. Because Tiger Tail and Blue, we did the same thing.
Yeah.
So one of the first things we talk about in this upcoming conversation is whether or not we had done a prior episode. We couldn't quite remember.
Well, you remember. I was just adamant that you were wrong.
We must have done an episode. Otherwise, why were we meeting and why were we hanging out and why did we know each other? You know what I'm saying?
So yeah.
It just didn't make sense that we hadn't done one.
So yeah.
that's all. Then I did have to go back and dig it out, and then I'm like, oh yeah, of course we did it over Skype, I think, or phone.
Yeah, the phone or Skype. Yeah.
Yeah. So there it is. So that's coming up. We could just say everything in this intro that we talk about, and then people will have to just
have this. The bullet points.
Anyway, so Blue and Mudshuffle, starring James Ransone and Alexia Rasmussen. Anybody else in it we want to mention?
Well, Karpovsky's in there.
Karpovsky, well, by law, of course.
Yeah.
Joe Swanberg.
Joe Swanberg's in there. Natasha Lyonne shows up.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And little Rebecca Spence plays Karpovsky's wife.
Hey, Rebecca Spence, right. It's a great cast.
Yeah. I was happy with it.
And that it's taken about a year, that's not unusual. I mean, maybe it's taken longer. I don't know.
No, it has taken longer, yeah.
It's just part of the way it is, right?
Yeah.
But do you feel do you feel still close to it? Do you feel there's some distance or?
I just feel bad that it takes so long. You know what I mean? Because
everybody involved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, well, when can I see it? It's like, I don't know when you can see it, because I don't know how this stuff works, but I mean, it's been around for like 2 years now, right?
Last night I went to see Catfight, a friend of mine who, Orner?
Mm-hmm.
I know you do. It's this new movie just opened this week, and I don't know if it's in Chicago. It's not in Chicago yet, but hopefully it'll be in Chicago. But it's also available through digital platforms. So I was over at my friend Max and Rebecca's last night, and we watched it on his incredible set. I was in one scene, even though I didn't have dialogue, but I'm in a scene. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Oh, actually, Bloom is going to be available for a digital download, too.
Okay, so where can people see it digitally?
iTunes, for
okay,
sure.
All right, so Matt Grady from Factory 25, your distributor, did well in that regard, so.
Yeah, I was excited to be on the list of the people at Factory 25.
It's a great list. Really,
it is a good list.
Yeah. Even Orner, the film that I'm not going to keep plugging myself, but I did a film with Orner years ago, his first film when he moved to Brooklyn, and that was a Factory 25 film, so.
Oh, see, there you go.
When is it going to be available on iTunes?
I think it's available for pre-order on the 21st.
21st of March?
Yeah.
Okay. Good enough. People can go to iTunes and just search and find out when it becomes available, but they can pre-order it. If you're listening and you're not yet familiar with Frank V. Ross, well, I'm already disappointed in you, but that's okay. I'll get over it. Just we can easily rectify it. If you live in Chicago or New York coming up, you have an opportunity to see it in a theater. Check your local listings, Google a little later in March. We're going to post the show ahead of time and put the dates down and the locations. And then it's also going to be available on iTunes momentarily. So congratulations. I'm glad people will finally have a chance to see this really fun film.
Yeah, thanks.
It's fun. I said fun, but I mean, I think it's fun to watch your films, but it's a jagged pill sometimes because, the characters are going through some rough times usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one way to put it. But yeah, it's still fun to watch, though. I mean, that's supposed to be like a depressing picture just because the people are depressed.
Exactly.
Most depressed people are really funny.
That's true.
Because they're deflecting.
Yes. And, I mean, most of comedy, great comedy, comes from deep pain. It's interesting. I just to, before we get off here and go into the segment, I just did a segment. I haven't posted it yet, but it's on my next show, is with this filmmaker. She made a documentary about how dark is too dark when it comes to making fun of something. And Joan Rivers actually comes up in it because the film, some of the talking heads she has in it, and it's mostly about, can you make jokes about the Holocaust? Can you make, so Mel Brooks, who is one of the talking heads, says, actually, he drew the line. He says, I will make fun of Nazis, but I will not make fun of, the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joan Rivers, though, who, of course, is not interviewed for the film, but who is he talks about it, he goes, but she didn't have that opinion, and, good for her, and she's, I admire her for that, but I couldn't do it. And then Sarah Silverman, too, of course, she's in it, and she could make jokes about the Holocaust. There's this, anyway.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just saying is that there is humor in the darkest place, and sometimes there's a catharsis in there, And in your films, I think there is catharsis, whether it's...
Yeah, small as it may be, minute as it may be.
I was talking about for you personally, because you're making your films as a catharsis, has been a catharsis for you. But now that you're living the life that you want.
Well, let's not go crazy.
I know, right? There's always some problem or, you know, disaster, I guess, around the corner. But even if it's financially not the greatest, it's still, you're going through a very magic time right now in the next few weeks. It's a magic time, and I'm very excited for you.
Yeah, it's thank you. It's a really exciting time. I don't know how else to put it.
Are you going to be there in the delivery room? Of course, right?
Yeah, that's just standard operating procedure now.
It is, right, of course. And then also literally just sit, because it can be, when it's happening, it can actually, you can get, some people get lightheaded. I was told to sit down. Like, the mother of my child had a cesarean. You know, there's curtained off, like her lower half, so you can't really see what's happening. But just knowing it's going on is even enough to be very, creating a lot of anxiety. And so I guess some guys have actually, like, you know, gotten dizzy or swooned.
Yeah, I thought about that. Like, you gotta cut, because they're like cutting somebody that you love. You know, like they're injuring her.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, yeah. So like, yeah, I don't want to see. I'm terrified of that. So we'll see.
It's one of the very most memorable moments in my life, because I remember her expression, and she was just so frightened. You know, and then because she's, you know, she knows it's happening. She doesn't feel the pain, but she feels the pressure, and she knows it's going on, and she's trembling, and then all of a sudden she says it's out, the baby is out. She felt it, you know, and then a couple moments later the baby's crying, and it's,
the mother said that to you?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Well, I'm sitting by her head with, you know, holding her hand.
Yeah.
And in the scrubs, you know, and then she could you know, you're not feeling pain, but you know, it's like when you're shot up with Novocaine at the dentist.
Yeah.
But you can still feel the pressure. You know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, because you can feel the pressure. You know where they are with the instruments. You just can't feel the pain.
Right.
So it's like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Only, you know, spit and rinse, you know, it's just, anyway. I'll look forward to hearing all about it in a few weeks, but and I hope to run into you, you know, when you're here in a few days. So,
well, I don't think I'm gonna.
Oh, you're not coming in. That's right. You did say that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Because even if they did, I probably shouldn't be leaving town.
No, it's true. I mean, she could go early if she's having natural.
Well, she's tracking big, so they told us to be ready to be early.
Okay, very good. Then yeah, you can't go.
Yeah.
Leave it to Matt Grady to push it right up to the wall there, man. Right up to the last. All right, let's go into our episode. Let's go into our conversation, Frank, where we met in Brooklyn in the Gowanus neighborhood, just a couple blocks from the offices of Rooftop Films, and where you had a screening of Bloomin' Mutt Shuffle. And we'll go into that. I think I already probably played the trailer, so people got a little bit of taste of that. And then. And then we'll come back afterwards, okay?
Okay.
All right. Here's me and Frank at his hotel room on an iPhone, but on the same iPhone. Okay.
On the bed.
Yeah.
So
anyway, this.
I after sitting in the car watching people having sex, I feel.
Well, I'm not going to make a move, so don't worry.
No. I, it's the last thing I'm worried about. Here, you know, we just watched a couple in a car across from us having. I don't know how far they got though. It's unclear. At first, it was very clear how the progress, because the girl was mounting the guy,
mm-hmm.
her butt was honking the horn, he was grabbing. Tugging away at her accoutrement, undoing various straps, buckles, snaps, garters, this and that.
But then she had that position where she was like, she had the dick.
Oh, she did? Oh, you saw it.
Yeah, because the arm was here, so she had it, but then she couldn't, like, get it.
Oh, I see. Like, yeah. That's what it was going wrong. Yeah, so then they had to think of something else to do, and then they shifted over to the other. Meanwhile, even though it's 10:30 or something like that,
Yeah.
And it's pouring out, and it's dark street with not any really good street lamps. Yet it's still like there's like 100 different clubs.
You know, it was good at best place.
But it was a nice distraction while we were waiting out the storm to come back to Frank Ross's hotel room, which is if you want to call it that, your hotel. You yeah.
10 by 6.
Yeah, your span is all about half of the width of the room.
I'm not 6 feet. And I can almost touch those two walls.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So we'll call it 10 by 7.
Because your arm span is your height.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was mind blowing to learn that. When you learn that.
That should be on the list of like things that you found out way too late. Like yeah. Arm span issue with antibiotics make birth control not work. Raccoons that you see in the day.
Wait, but antibiotics what?
Make birth control not work.
Make birth control not work. What's birth control in this case?
Like the pill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It should be on the box.
It should be on the box. I just don't know anybody who does birth control anymore. Pills.
I know a lot of chicks from the 70s.
Oh, it was, that's right. Your mother? clearly on antibiotics at one point or other. But the other good thing is also had enough time to digest a little bit. So after the meal, so I'm not feeling compelled to like lay down and...
Yeah, I got past my nap stage.
Exactly.
I was ready to sleep there for a little bit.
Right. And I'm not mentioning the restaurant because okay. No, it's okay. It's good. It's good to have on the podcast. We won't mention the name of the restaurant, even though it's a barbecue place of note in the Gowanus area, because you know I don't do that kind of for free. You got to pay sponsorship prices if you want me to mention your restaurant.
It makes sense to me.
And you're in town because you are having a screening. It's going to be people will hear this after the screening, unfortunately, but that's the way it goes. You know, we could have done this on Skype and probably even gotten a better audio results, but
those Skype interviews, who cares? Sound like shit.
I don't want to say that, but I mean, I get a decent quality out of it, but it's never...
Tip-top. It's never tip-top.
It's never tip-top, yeah. There's nothing quite like a microphone shoved up against your mouth so you can talk about it. So today I was real... I just was like, thought I was all organized. I usually go through this the night before the next morning so I don't forget, and I guess I just didn't do that last night, so I apologize. So what you're hearing is me and Frank Ross, Chicago-based indie filmmaker extraordinaire, on an iPhone, which is... Sean Baker should have been on the iPhone, not you, right? Sean mm-hmm. Baker made his movie on an iPhone.
Yeah.
What do you use? On Bloomin' Mud Shuffle.
It was the Canon EOS 5, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I didn't shoot it, so I didn't.
Oh, who shot it?
Mike Gibbiser.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is he's a Chicago guy, too?
He was for a brief time there, yeah, for a little
Where
time.
Where is he now?
Now he's in Iowa.
He's teaching
in Iowa, yeah.
He's teaching.
Before that, I think he's...
I thought they just had writer colonies in Iowa. I didn't know they actually...
Well, he's teaching them then.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing that. Before that, I think he's from New Jersey, and then he was in Boston for a while going to school.
Right.
He's a Chicago guy. Mm-hmm. We made two films together.
Which
two
one?
Two and a half, actually.
What's the other one?
He shot Tiger Tail in Blue.
Okay, so. Which was your last film.
Mm-hmm.
Where we met, and 2 years ago, 2 summers ago, almost to probably this week, I'm guessing, we sat down and we did the first. Right, we did a. But where did we do it? Because
we
went out.
We did not interview. There was no interview. This is our first interview.
No, it's not true. You've been on the podcast before.
That's not true.
I'm almost certain. That's bizarre.
I'd love to be on record being wrong.
But you would know better than me, because I've interviewed on my podcast hundreds of people. You, at the most, have been on twice. But according to you, once. Are you telling me... Wait, we went out to dinner. Why would I have met you in there and gone out to dinner if we didn't do it?
Because it was during the screening.
What was during the screening, though?
Our cheeseburger was during while the movie was showing.
Oh, and I went to...
But
that
before.
Doesn't make any sense to me that I didn't...
But it
makes sense we did go out to dinner. When would we have done... I don't remember doing the interview now that you say that, but I was so certain that you did the... Tiger Tail in Blue. I interviewed you while you were here. My God, this is a revelation. Like, I'm shocked. Anyway.
One person here forgot to bring the recording equipment. And it's not me. So yeah,
right.
I get the
no, it's my second like mind-blowing thing that's gone on here. I was so convinced that this is your second time on the show.
If it is.
I don't know why. If I was doing the podcast, then I wouldn't have had you on, though. That's the real tricky part of it. I know.
I have no idea.
I'm really thinking more out loud at this stage.
Yeah. The answer is in an email somewhere.
Okay, but I'm going to look, but please just look it up anyway, please, because is there any possible remote way you might have done it and forgotten? Is that
a
possibility?
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Okay.
It's not right.
It's not what happened.
It's not what happened.
Of course it's
but possible. I wouldn't know, because I forgot.
Like, what's the dollar value, what's the dollar amount you would bet that you did not do the show before, if you were to put a number on it?
Oh, honestly?
Yeah. Like, if I were to bet you, like, $50,
I would take that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. I would go with $50.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because I have that on me. Like, I would bet that. I would bet what I have on me.
This is, like, kind of, seriously, like, a first time where, you know, it is kind of understandable. Like, I have done so many shows. But it was just logical that I would have thought that because last time we went out to have it. But maybe I was there for other reasons, or maybe I can't. And then I knew you were coming, and we spontaneously said, let's go get a bite. But we had been emailing or something. We had to, because we knew each other before we went out to dinner.
Yeah.
I have to go back into my emails, because I'm pretty sure I have any emails going back.
Okay, at the end of the show, you can read our emails back.
From 2013.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then welcome finally to the podcast.
Thanks, it's great to be here.
I know, I'm really thrilled that we're doing this finally to rectify then that, because that's just comes as a complete shock. And then during these emails, I do also recall you sent me a link to finally I got to see Audrey the Trainwreck, because I had not seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have seen those, at least, I think even one other film. Okay. What's the one between Audrey the Trainwreck and Tiger Tail in Blue? There was one.
No, there's not one in between.
Oh, okay. So maybe I have. What was the one before Audrey the Trainwreck then?
Before Audrey the Trainwreck is Present Company.
I think I did see that one.
That's one where I'm in that one. And, we have a kid who lives in the basement of her parents' house.
Okay. Was that based on actual?
No.
Okay.
No. That movie was based on, I had a friend who knocked up a girl, had a minor league hockey contract, and then gave it up to, you know, be a father, and then she miscarried, and then shortly after that, like, they divorced the marriage and blah, blah, blah.
Ooh.
But
that's a series of unfortunate events.
Yeah, but I...
Because then he's, like, go back to square one. Now, can I get that hockey?
No, he works at a hardware store. He's married to a woman who has six kids that, like, aren't his. Oh. He's a fucking asshole. It's totally okay.
Wow.
But that's who...
Sequel.
Yeah. The follow-up. But that's who inspired that movie. That was like who that was based on. But just the sports thing seemed like too much to me. Uh-huh. Too much like,
right,
high drama.
Were you a waiter in that one? Did you make him a waiter?
No, he's a plumber.
But you were in. Were you, let me ask you, because I clearly am asserting way too many things, and then it turns out it's not based in any fact.
Just be correcting you.
Were you playing? Did you not play a waiter in one of your films?
In Tiger Tail.
Tiger Tail Blue. Yeah. Yes. So that's right. And you're married in that one, mm-hmm. And she's also works in the restaurant.
She's an English teacher.
She's an English teacher, but doesn't she work?
And then, yeah, the same actress plays.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but that was definitely the one that put you on my radar, and then I went. But I had heard of Audrey the Trainwreck,
mm-hmm.
Partly because it's such a great title, and you know, well, actually, all your titles are fantastic. Where do you come up with the names? The new film, which, by the way, stars Alexia Rasmussen, who's been on this show, also Alex Karpovsky, mm-hmm. is in it. He has a... And who's the... Oh, James Ransone.
James Ransone.
Who's just on this show.
Like yesterday.
Like yesterday. Well, I posted it yesterday, but we, in fact, did that interview mm-hmm. in the summer of 2013. No. And this is his first film with you, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Joe shows up in a scene at the end, and then
Schlumberger,
in a couple
of
scenes.
Yes.
In it, too.
Who?
And then And then Rebecca Spence, who was in Tiger Tail.
Oh, yes. She shows up. That's right. Too, yeah. She's, I remember that. That's right. I recognized her.
Yeah.
Right. I really. Yeah. So I guess that what I was asking was, where do you come up with like title, like Blumen Mud Shuffle? Was that mentioned in the film and I forgot?
No. Each word is in the movie.
Okay.
Unrelated to.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually kind of like, it was like a little game I was playing with myself. Like, it kind of get the word bloom in there, kind of get the word mud and the word shuffle, but it's all out of context. Like, that's not the point of the title. Bloom and Mud Shuffle is like my made-up version of Same Shit, Different Day.
Oh, okay.
Or, what is it, like, Notre Dame Paradise. It's a response to How You Doing.
Oh, okay. It sounds almost like a legitimate expression maybe people bandy about, like in Ireland. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Well, Blumen is.
I found myself in another Blumen Mud Shuffle.
Yeah, exactly. Blumen is like a shorthand for
bloody, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also derived from. I had a title at one point where I was like, because you know, it's a short sort of romance that doesn't really work out. So mm-hmm. like it, there's this Khalil Gibran sentence, I guess you would call it, where like love that knows it's. Love that grows slow like a tree, lasts a long time, or love that blooms like a flower, knows its season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of from there, too. But that's, you know, a little too soft for my my liking.
Yeah, right.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. No, all right.
Unknown number? Shit.
I know, unknown.
I don't know you.
It's probably the airline. did you make it to your hotel? Okay, so in Bloom and Mud Shuffle... You already mentioned James Ransone meets and falls for his coworker
mm-hmm.
in their place of work.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly, they have a real heavy-duty flirtation going on. And they fall into having a romance.
Yeah.
And then she's like, moves, she's like, this is not it for me.
Right.
And he finds himself completely and utterly distracted and obsessed with her.
Yeah.
And, like, well, from the beginning, he's the reason she leaves the relationship, right? Because he's way too...
he doesn't do anything right.
And he's way too tenacious and way too desperate, which is really nice to cast against type, because he's usually playing these kind of type A,
mm-hmm.
very charismatic, and I don't know, it seems like this was against type for him.
Mm-hmm.
No?
I've not put much thought into it,
uh-huh.
into that. I just like watching him,
uh-huh.
so that's where I...
Well, I mean, he's not doesn't come across as, like, a nebbishy guy, or somebody who would be desperate, and, you know, he's athletic, good-looking, fairly self-assured. That's the vibe he gives off, and then, like, about a third of the way through the film, if that far, mm-hmm. he's putting off a very different vibe.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you? How am I doing? You know,
yeah.
That asking how are you, but it's really how am I doing according to you?
Yeah.
That kind of, we've all been there before where, you know, we're really want to be loved by our...
Yeah, you want to make them like you.
Yeah.
It's like, watch me.
By that point, it's over already.
Right.
In most
right.
cases.
Yeah. So it's that kind of relationship. And they play it really, really well, I think.
He also has a pretty serious drinking problem.
Yeah, yeah. In the previous screenings that we've had, I've had people in recovery come over and tell me that they just like the way it was portrayed, because it's not an issue movie.
Right.
Like, it's just something else that the guy has, you know? It's just another thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of almost done those scenes and those moments in a very matter-of-fact way.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know, he's the last one at the bar, or he's... Oh, that particular time, he fell down drunk, or
right.
he passed out, or is sick, or something. But it's not what the movie's about.
Right.
It's incidental,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Yeah, it's part of his personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His difficulty being vulnerable and exposed, and being himself in social situations, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And she'd like... I mean, he's got her on the hook for a little while, but I don't think she's...
For sure.
...ever really serious about him. And, you know, when they talk, it's like clumsy, and sort of she runs the conversation anyway, I think, in sort of like...
Well, it's...
I enjoy watching it.
It's super realistic. Yeah, they're great, Alexia and James. It's so true, because somebody like that, again, who drinks to...
For whatever reason, you don't have to...
Okay, yeah. But it's, you know, we're... I understand what you mean, but we know a lot of... generally, you know somebody who drinks to be more at ease with themselves and in social situations. If you're in a relationship, that works for about a week, maybe two, you know. But then, you know, you start to spend more time and you dig deeper psychologically into each other because you're getting to know each other. The superficial part has to fall away fairly quickly. And once you're in a relationship with somebody where that's scary and that's...
Well, that's that moment where she sleeps past her alarm. Like, she does, she's irresponsible because she drank too much with him. And, like, she comes out and says, like, you're no good for me.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think that's, like, a major trigger. This is what losers do. They, they're always late, you know, like...
Yeah.
Because they're
irresponsible. They get fired. Yeah.
They do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite part in it is where he shows up to work, like, super late. He's like, are you drunk? And James's line is like, yeah, a little bit, but, you know, I woke up that way, so it's not my fault. Because if you haven't been there where you wake up still drunk, it is something that happens.
No, of course. Yeah. I know people who experience that. It's just, it's so, for me, it's not, I've never drunk to that degree, you know. You sound almost like when you're talking about it, and I admit that we've only done a little bit of talking about it, but it sounds almost like you don't want to over-scrutinize your own story and the subtext.
It's not that I don't want to. It's, I'm not sure how intelligently I can.
Because the stories are pretty intelligent, so therefore...
Yeah, I...
But
I,
you, then you dumb down by trying to sound like the smart guy, self-analyzing and all that?
I think so. I think so.
It's, you know, it's funny, because there's some really amazing poets and writers and songwriters, and you listen to their lyrics and, or, you know, their performances are so incredible. And then when they get when they're interviewed, they sound so inarticulate. You're not inarticulate. I'm just saying.
I think that, I am, but
well, maybe around talking about yourself and your films. That I now understand that.
Okay, you win your comfort level. Okay.
But no, but I'm saying because I just had dinner with him and he was very articulate. It's an interesting thing. Like I don't know. Like I just whenever sometimes I would see like a Paul McCartney. Albeit 40 years ago, maybe 25 years ago. And you'd see him on some interview show, and he could, it seems like at times he could barely put a sentence together. That could be shyness, too. It's just so amazing. And then he wrote a song like Here, There, and Everywhere, or what other 500 other songs, and that are just so incredibly constructed. So it's so obvious that great talent and intellect went into being able to do something like that. And then you're talking to them, and they're like, you know, stumbling about, you know, it's that. But that could be discomfort, too. It's not necessarily, you know, much more than that.
I mean, I've read, like, talking about writing, I think, is like reading about jazz. It's like, yes, it's probably necessary, but who gives a shit?
Yeah.
So when it's something about, like, writing or, like, analyzing your story and all this stuff, like, a lot of writing for me is, like, fostering... call it luck, call it inspiration, but like a one good idea, then you sort of nurture it, you know, and like trap it along, and it's, and you're dealing with a little bit of, let's call it magic, right? You're dealing with like a little bit of a magic trick, and what happens when you explain the magic trick?
Yeah, right. Okay. It loses the magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my, like, I have heard, I don't like to read about, I don't like to, there's certain directors, writers, authors that I'll read them talk about their shit because they're really good at it, you know, but, and I like it, but it doesn't make me like their stuff anymore than before.
Part of being an independent filmmaker on your scale is you're showing your film at a lot of festivals, and you're showing your film, you're showing up at a lot of your screenings when you have a theatrical, because that's what people do. You know, they have to do Q&As.
Right.
And my thought is you're going to have to talk about your film a lot with people because they're going to want to engage with you at a Q&A. That's just why you're having it. So is that something that you find painful or?
No, I really enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah. It gets, I kind of look at it as like a little bit, I don't want to say performance, but I try to engage. I don't want to be boring. Like, I'm phobic about being boring, you know, to them. But, like, I did explain. I was at the most recent Q&A thing I did was the guy asked me about the last shot of the movie. And I sort of teased him, and then I felt bad about teasing him.
and explain to him what I think the last shot means in finite terms. Uh-huh. And then I told him, that, I said, great, and I just sucked all the fun right out of that poem. Like, you know, just like that. And then, you know, everybody yeah. kind of chuckled or whatever. Right. But I wasn't looking, but the guy left. And I wasn't trying to be mean or anything like that. I was just trying to, like, have it be a fun...
Do you think he didn't get it?
Show. I don't really... I mean, it doesn't matter
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's listening. Well, when he sees your name...
I meant it kindly. I was...
yeah.
I was joking around the way I would with anybody else.
Sure. It, so.
But what I'm saying is I will answer questions straight up, but I just think, you know, you got to make them... If you're going to come all the way out here, you might as well make them laugh, too.
Sure.
I think that's really
part important. Of the right of a Q&A is also... Hopefully that it's a part of the, I don't know if entertainment is the right word, but it should be part of the overall.
The show.
The show yeah. for the night. Yeah. Do a little, you know, put some sand on the ground and, or salt, whatever they do. Sand. Yeah. And tap dance a little bit and do a little soft shoe. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Do whatever you have to do to get their $15 worth, you know. what are they charging rooftop films these days? I don't even know.
Hey, no, I don't have to pay. And I don't...
That money is going to some degree, hopefully. During dinner, we went to this restaurant, as I mentioned, and we're talking about Chicago is known for, or at least it used to be, maybe it's less now, but it used to be known for their deep pan pizza, deep dish pizza. But it's funny how nobody in Chicago cares about it. It's like seafood in Boston. Yeah, of course. Well, anywhere on the coast, yeah. it's seafood town.
There's fucking water over there. Of course we got seafood.
And there's things living in it, and you eat them.
You got cows, we got fish.
New York's got fish.
New York's got fish. There's a lot of good oyster bars in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a lot of everything in New York.
That's true. I do like coming here quite a bit.
Do you like it? Yeah. Are you like food?
The joys of food.
The joys of it. Yeah. Like, are you into sushi at all? Or is that...
Not particularly. Uh-huh. I mean, it's like...
But you like raw bar more than sushi?
I like anything.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know. But it's nice because if you don't distinguish between... I know, in a positive way, I mean this, like a great slice of pizza. You mm-hmm. know, it's every bit of, you know, be a great as experience as going to, like, an expensive place and getting,
oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, I love eating pizza here.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
So, what do you do in Chicago other than filmmake and work? What do you do, like, on a night out?
I don't get out much.
Uh-huh.
No, I like to cook. I cook a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
So when you're in the restaurant, I'm sorry, do you want to talk about that?
I don't, but okay. I mean, yeah.
Then let's finish your thought, yeah. then, which is moving on.
I work in a restaurant for cash, because I'm an idiot.
I don't see it.
It's okay.
More money.
Yeah, everybody does.
Yeah.
It's never enough, though.
It's true. You're absolutely right, because there's always another level to what you need to do, and or buy, or pay back, or this or that, or mm-hmm. try to get ahead.
Yeah.
Or finance. But, you know, that's another topic, too. First finish about what you do, so you stay home a lot and cook on your nights off. Well, you've got everything you need. You got yeah. a place to live?
Yeah.
What neighborhood are you in?
I have a house in Woodridge with my wife.
Right. And you got a kitchen in there?
I got a kitchen. I redid my kitchen, you know.
That must have been very exciting.
Yeah, it was fun.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you play a part in, like, did you have, like, the architect come over and...
No, I redid my kitchen.
You did it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize you're also handy, though.
I'm quite handy, yeah.
Carpentry?
Basic carpentry.
Sheetrock? And
all that shit, man.
But you can, like, put in a, can you put in a, like, a hood and, like, a vent system, like that kind of thing?
I can. I didn't. I don't have an industrial kitchen. I got a little house in the suburbs.
Okay. But, I mean, if you're all right, but you usually, if you have a nice... I don't know if you had a nice, like, stove or
anything. No range.
Nothing.
It's on a budget.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. But you still upgraded, and it looks nice.
Yeah, knocked out a wall, made a little island. I'll show you pictures.
Oh, sure. That'd be great. And we'll put them up so people can see, as a reference,
Frank's
Kitchen. I know where I'm eating when I go to Chicago next time.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's nice. Well, I could eat in that other spot, or I could eat at your place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm inviting myself over.
Yeah, you might as well. You know,
I'm sure. And then what I was going to get to was financing your films. And also that might be something sensitive, but you can talk as much as you want or not as much as you want. Now you've made about a half dozen features. Is it? It's not much easier. You have a backlog of work to show. So in that regard, it must be somewhat easier to get the financing or to go to people.
No, not really.
Okay, no. That's a honest answer.
I've made 8 movies. Two of them have been financed. One was a, what do they call it, crowdsourcing.
Mm-hmm. Which one was that?
Tiger Tail and Blue.
Okay.
Was, we
makes sense, because...
Raised $5,000, but basically 3 people of that were of that $5,000, basically.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The majority of that money came
my,
from
yeah, my Uncle Rocky, my Cousin Rocky, and Joe.
You have 2 Rockies?
I guess.
Senior Rocky Jr.?
There's lots of Rockies. Okay. Yeah, there's
just... Is it Irish, Italian family? I don't know.
Those are all on my mom's side, the Italian side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dad's Irish or Jewish?
My dad...
Ross.
My dad was half Irish.
Okay.
Ross is Italian. It was changed.
Oh, was it for Rossini or Rossellini?
Russo.
Or Russo.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like such a modest shift of a name. I know Russo is,
well, but... You know what, though? They came over when there was a lot of prejudice against Italians.
Sure.
And then... Oh, I mean... So Ross was changed just because, but then even on my mom's side,
mm-hmm.
They kept the last name Sapienza, but a couple of them adapted...
Sapienza?
Sapienza. It's a really common name.
Okay, because it's...
Super common name.
All right. Wasn't that the name of the Ocean Greens film? La Sapienza?
I think there's a Sapienza. It means wisdom.
Oh, okay.
So, and it's also, it's on tons of signs in Italy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But a couple of them adopted American names. Like, my grandpa's name is Vito, but everybody called him Will. Just because when they would hear like his name, they would sort of treat him different, stuff like that. So that's why they did that. How do we get here?
Oh, well, we were talking about financing and most of your...
Oh, right, then I said Rockies. Yeah.
The Rockies.
Okay.
Rockies. And by the way, there's going to be a 6th Rocky movie. You know that.
Oh, yeah, with Apollo.
Apollo's
with
kid.
Apollo's kid, yeah. Well, Rocky Balboa was really good, so...
I agree.
Yeah, so I'll take
you
it.
You think Boy Young will be in this one at Rocco? So you're just like, you're just wondering if...
Polly.
Brittany Polly. And then Jason Schwartzman was on talking about Talia Shire.
Uh-huh.
An owner, who I keep telling you about, and hopefully maybe they'll show up. He was... asking Jason Schwartzman about Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
See, I was asking, just keeping it to 7 Chinese Brothers or The Overnight.
Okay.
And trying to help promote him. And then owner comes over, and he's bombastic, and he's very big and bigger than life. And he's like, he wants to know about the fight scenes in mm-hmm. Rocky, and did he remember them when he was a kid? So it's good to have owner on as a guest host, co-host, the person. You should listen to that show. But your family, Rockies, see, I'm gonna be responsible enough to remember all of the times I leave the thread. I'll come back to it. So you got, majority of it was financed by 3 people in the last film.
The majority.
The Tiger Tail and Blue.
Tiger Tail and Blue is the majority from there. And then Audrey the Train Wreck was also paid for.
But that was pre-crowdsourcing tools.
Right?
There was no
probably
Kickstarter then.
Yeah, and it wasn't very much money, but it was more than I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And then with this movie, it was a group of investors that I probably shouldn't say we got in touch with.
they're all in Mumbai.
It fell the fuck into my lap, basically. It was just handed to me. It was very, very lucky. So we had the budget. It was way more than I've ever had. But mm-hmm. I still didn't have money for the things I never have money for. Like locations, wardrobe, just stuff like that, which is very, very important. We had money for food, the actors.
Karpovsky stayed at the Four Seasons. I understand.
No, Karpovsky stayed at the... they all stayed at this extended stay hotel.
What's that mean?
And it's, you know, they have weekly rates, like these travel hotels. And they found a couple of good restaurants around in the area that they like to go to, and I think they just sort of hung out. It's not a cool place to bring people, you know, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, maybe 20, 25-minute ride to the city.
Okay. It's like this.
Yeah.
This neighborhood, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose. No.
Because it's a lot cooler here?
It's a lot cooler here.
You're not going to get laid in a car in that neighborhood in Chicago, is what you're saying.
You're not. You should, because it's way more private.
Yeah, right. I understand.
There's less people around. There's more parking lots.
Right.
Yeah, parking Nugent. But yeah, it was a suburb. It's a suburb I grew up in. They stayed in Westmont.
Okay.
Where I grew up. That's where we shot most of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
you kind of come back, in other words, because this, as you describe it, the financing for Bloom and Mud Shuffle fell into your lap, like, just luckily and just out of nowhere, or sort of, you know.
Yeah, basically.
So it doesn't, that's not necessarily something you can just say, oh, make happen again automatically for the next movie.
Well, I probably need to sell this one.
Okay. I'm getting far ahead of myself.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing because a lot of people are going to try to get as much they can. You know, like if young first-time filmmakers are listening, you've made eight films.
Mm-hmm.
How's that possible if you have no money ever for it? How do you, you're still making these fantastic character-driven films, one after the other.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of people are like, that's pretty special.
Thinking back on it now, intelligently, I realized that I knew I wasn't going to be able to, like, go into the biz and make the movie sort of thing. So sort of getting back to, like, being handy and shit, mm-hmm. It was just like, well, let's just get a camera and we'll make it. Like, we don't have any money. Fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, so we borrowed money. We borrowed cameras from a wedding company. You know, somebody we knew had a wedding company. I ended up spending a lot of money on my first movie, money I didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Like credit cards?
Oh, you know, credit card. Hohokam was entirely on a credit card. It was $9,000 credit card debt. I still have credit card debt that I'm probably paying off. Hohokam's probably somewhere in there. You know, bought the cameras.
Hohokam was your first or second film?
Fourth.
There's a town in New Jersey called Hohokam.
Hohokam is the name of the tribe that predates the Pimas.
Okay.
Like, the reason why Phoenix is called Phoenix is because these people used to be there, the Hohokam tribes, mm-hmm. and then they just weren't there anymore, and then they're rebuilding this town out of the ashes.
Oh, my goodness.
It's the most arrogant fucking American thing ever. Wow. That's why the movie's set there. You know, because it's like, oh, we're going to be around forever.
Was it shot in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's shot in Phoenix, Tempe,
uh-huh.
Gilbert.
Uh-huh.
So, like, suburbs of Phoenix, too, yeah. and stuff like yeah, that. Yeah, but that's the idea.
Uh-huh.
It's
some political stuff going on there.
It's actually... I looked at it as making a dystopian movie. To me, Hohokam is a dystopian film.
For some... Yeah, it is dystopian. You're right. I mean, you know, we look at dystopian as being post-apocalyptic, but for some...
Well, you don't.
This is the post-apocalyptic.
You don't need the exaggeration anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, we're past. I really like the movie Demolition Man. We're past Demolition Man.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, eventually we're going to be past the dates of these science fiction movies.
Yeah,
it's actually a lot fucking worse than a lot of them predicted. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, you look at, like, the little tape in Clockwork Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the technology. Like, we're mm-hmm. way past that.
Mm-hmm.
So you. For me, maybe this is arrogant to think, but I think if you just include certain technologies, like, you're automatically dystopian because mm-hmm. we're there.
Do you have somebody casting your films now, or are you still in a very active way involved in that?
I want to do a proper casting process for the next film,
mm-hmm.
just because I sat in on some of Stephen Cohen's classes and seen some of these young Chicago actors, uh-huh. and I would just like to see them and, like, give them little parts and have them.
Sure.
You know, do stuff, because they're really talented.
So you're just relying on friends at this point, for
yeah,
the most part?
Yeah, people like an actor friend of mine, Kurt Nabick, who's I've worked with for a long time, many times, he worked in casting, so he gets it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, we're friends, so I'll send him a script, he'll read it, and he'll, like, give me specific names. That's how I came to Rebecca. No, I'm sorry, I came to Rebecca via
Rebecca
Allison.
Spence, in this case. You're
yeah.
From...
Yeah, so... It's a different sort of casting process. Like, we had people come over to Joe's basement and just, like, talk with him for a little bit and be like, all right, he's cool.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's like,
does that work?
It did.
Are they, you know, have you seen their, you've seen, but they, you've also seen them on stuff, like you've seen their film.
No, not all of them.
Okay.
No, not all of them. But, and then Alexia came through because Joe called me while we were casting it, and he said, he told me that they were on Proxy a couple days together, and then one of her days.
Oh right, Joe was in that too. Of
yeah,
course.
She was just in a tub of cold blood for like 6 hours, and I said, that sounds terrible. And he's like, yeah, she was cool the whole time, and I was like,
well,
okay,
that's what you want.
That's the equivalent of making a movie with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's either you're not going to have a hissy at somebody. You're,
yeah,
you know, it's not. There's none of that on your set.
Well, I figure 6 hours in cold blood bathtub is the same as like 20 days mm-hmm. in un, un-air-conditioned apartments. It's like the same thing. Mm-hmm. So that, and then we Skyped. And
right. In other words, you're referring to the fact you can't have the air conditioner on when you're shooting a film.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. So there weren't, we weren't considering many people, I guess, in the long run. But, yeah.
James, you had known from Red Zone?
No. No, Joe was my link to that. Okay. Because, yeah, I think they met at a film festival or something like that some time ago.
Yeah, smart
and,
guy.
And I was like, what kind of relationship? Like, can you just email it to him? Like, do we have to go through all this bullshit?
Really?
And, yeah, so we just did that and then Skyped. And I already knew, you know, like, I wrote it for him with him in mind. So he had it. You know, he had to do what he wanted to do it, and it was his, so...
Wow. He's a smart guy, though.
He is, yeah.
Like, really well... Like, really a lot... Like, you know, again, it's like there's a persona. You can see it in your film, and, of course, in Sean Baker's film, and what have you. I mean, I've seen him in a bunch of things, and, you know, and then it turns out he's just... There's a lot of stuff going on, and let's put that
way. There's a lot swimming around in his head.
No, yeah, he's a thoughtful person. He's got a lot to say, and he's got a lot of opinions, and he's very well read, and he's obviously really intellectually curious, so it's really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something about him that I sort of was picking up on, and I said, you know, when they were, I was originally just going to interview Sean, and then I thought, well, if I brought on James, then I'm not bringing on the two lead women who have trans... transitioned.
You look for words.
Transgendered. they come, they just don't always come on time.
This should be like a video thing, though, because you look really Jewy when you're looking for a word. It's like it's a joy.
Well, that's the problem with editing, is nobody ever hears that. I don't leave that in. And I've tried. I have quite a few ticks, I guess, so.
Well, you should edit that to just make it sound like I just say you look really Jewy, just like randomly.
Right, just at the beginning. And, you know, put it in arbitrarily in different places. Or even in somebody else's interview. Why is Frank Ross walking in the middle of my interview with David Gordon Green and saying I look really Jewy? But, you know, what I was getting at before we both interrupted me was that by having on James and Sean, I wasn't having on his two African-American transgendered actresses, and so I kind of thought, well, that was a little bit, I feel bad that I'm not doing that, because I am very Jewy in that way, very neurotic.
I'm always thinking,
what didn't I do? What am I not doing? And, you know, so yeah. Well, you've described all this set sound like their dreams, other than the stuffy, because you can't run air conditioning if you're shooting in the summer, or if you're sitting and doing a long car scene, it could take up to then a couple of hours sometimes to do a scene or two in a car.
You notice there's no car scene in the
summer.
Movie.
Yeah. And if you're in a Chicago summer, it can get kind of humid. But other than that, it sounds like things are very civilized and friendly on the sets. But surely in 8 films, you must have had tension with an actor or an actress or somebody maybe on the crew not working out. And I don't know how you handle that.
Not well.
No, that's when you're my fire that.
Yeah, no, the fire.
I know.
Like that. Yeah, I don't. I know. I've realized that I don't give off the impression that I know what I'm doing, and I've just accepted it. You know. Does that make sense or not?
It makes sense within the scope of the production of a film, potentially, or talking about it.
Well,
not knowing you, it made again 8 features, and they've all been again. I've seen at least half of those films, so. I would just say that it's like I know you know what you're doing, but that's just.
But I don't. I'm not. I don't look like it.
Okay,
is what I'm saying. Okay. I know I don't look like it.
I haven't seen you on the set, but
yeah, I don't think I give off that vibe. Like, oh, this guy knows what he's fucking doing. You know, like, oh, he's good. I don't do that. I'm kind of. I don't know. It's my height, maybe.
Yeah, the orchestra conductor, that guy who knows has to, you know, give off that vibe that he does. Otherwise,
yeah, and then often, and then I also. Often, like, stop myself from giving certain directions and stuff. So I'll walk up and just say, you know, never mind. And then just, like, walk away. Mm-hmm. But my first movie, the whole crew quit. And I finished shooting it myself just on, like, a tripod and us in front of it. Second movie, I was the whole crew. because my first crew had quit, so I was like, well, I can't have a crew.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend Imbrogno helped me shoot that one. And then Quiet Leon Bai was just a great summer,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was really young, and you know, nobody had anything to do. We all quit our jobs for 2 weeks and shot a movie really fast. Now, that movie, I learned you can't shoot more than so many days in a row because you're going to – people are going to turn on you.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. And when that happened that night, I called it out, you know, and I said, like, why is everybody mad at me? You know, and they told me, and I was like, all right, cool. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, let's move on.
Yeah.
And then Hohokam was the same way. All the actors wore lavaliers. I held the camera, and that was it. There was no crew.
Wow.
And then but we're getting to an unhealthy thing here, which is like, so now let's just smash cut to Blue and Mud Shuffle. I worked with so small of a crew that I didn't know how to work with a crew anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I forgot to check if the sound guy
was rolling. And this is now you had a semblance of a real crew.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like Jesse was the sound guy, and I just, there's like tape of him saying, he needs to tell us when he's rolling, you know? And I'm like, fuck, right, I don't, because I always ran the sound. Right. Even if I was acting in it, yeah. I was the one hitting record and stuff like that. So that was I didn't have any tension with any actors on this one. I don't think. Maybe I'm playing
deluding yourself.
Yeah. But like on Audrey, you know, there was some problems with like you know, drugs and stuff like that. But the movie that came out of it, I'm so proud of that.
Yeah.
It's just like, I can't even remember how I had a really, it was not fun making that movie. It didn't have a very fun time.
But it did well in the festivals, that one, right?
It did well for me. It did do well in the festivals. Richard Brody really praised it really highly, which was like, that was so great. Got a horrible New York Times review, which Richard Brody like handed his ass back to him for it. But so that was really fun. I'm so proud of that movie. You know.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting. I'm sorry if I'm interrupting. I was just gonna say it's interesting you brought up. I went on to get into specifics. I know you wouldn't, but about Audrey the Trainwreck, about how a culture forms around a set, mm-hmm. like. That's something that's organic.
Mm-hmm.
You can't designate that something. I mean, you can try and do certain things, maybe mm-hmm. create an environment, maybe by having people all live in one house, for instance, or, you know,
yeah.
or on one spot, or the opposite, keep everybody apart. You know, you can do those, make those choices, but there's always going to be a culture that's created, and it's interesting. It just sort of happens. It's not necessarily in your control, so.
Right.
Like, everybody will get along.
Mm-hmm.
People go break into little cliques.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gets along. I don't know. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Each time, maybe it's a little different, right?
I mean, that's, oh, yeah. 100%. Always differently.
Yeah.
Always different. Yeah, but this one was fun. People would break off and do their things. And plus, you know, when you're shooting, like, with union rules and stuff like that, like, it's fucking great because, like, right. they remind you to eat.
Right. Yeah.
And like,
these decisions are made for you.
That's fantastic. You can only work so many hours. It's great. You still get exhausted.
Uh-huh.
You know, but like this one, we went over on a shoot that had a location move, right? And we were losing the light. And when you have a shoot where the sound guys are like, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
Like to make this happen tonight. And then, you know, they're climbing up on the roof and hanging gels.
Yeah.
So we can like that's what you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. So it makes an argument for this type of the gorilla stuff is kind of romantic for a little while, but
stuff like that happens.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like Jesse's a pro. He's a pro sound guy. He's, you know, you're not paying him to climb up on the fucking roof and hang lights.
Yeah.
You know, but when that happens,
uh-huh.
you know, he's like, what do you need? Like, we got to get this done, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And whether it's for you or they just want to go home, the point is they're not just sitting on their asses, you know, like they're doing it. And that's great. So, I mean, I've always had crews like that, sets like that, when I have a crew, you know.
So, yeah, so you don't...
You know, that goes back to earlier, too. Like,
uh-huh.
people, like, how do you make a movie? How do you do this and that? It's like,
yeah.
you just do it.
Uh-huh.
It's like, we need a sound guy. No, not really. Just, you know. Like, yeah, your quality, like, your hewn isn't going to be as great.
Yes.
But I'll take it.
Yeah.
You know, I would much rather have, like... I kind of love the imperfections in my movies, you know. I see them; they don't bother me. I kind of like them. To me, they're like the pops on an old film, you know, like 16 millimeter.
scratches the whatever
that's,
it is.
That's what they feel like to me, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. It reminds you that...
You want to make a soap opera? I mean, we're shooting on video, you know what I mean? So, I like that, because to me there's an energy in those imperfections. So,
did you like Teamsters?
No.
Okay.
No. That's what, yeah, I haven't had, like, a Teamster crew, though, it'd probably be like, the sound guy can't hang the lights, because that's what I'm getting paid for, but the right. Teamster crew, would you have gone over on the previous shoot?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've never done it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have plenty of time yet. You're a young guy.
Keep telling myself that.
Okay, so hopefully at some point soon we'll be able to say something along the lines of, you'll be able to see Bloom and Mud Shuffle at the Siskel Center.
Yeah.
And here at the Angelica, or something like that.
Something like that. Or just video on demand. Something.
Really?
Hopefully.
Well, that I'm certain will happen. I'm just wondering if you're going to bypass the theatrical or...
I don't know. I don't know how this shit works, man.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody really in your position. There are tons of people who are probably have the same feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially as now things are starting to change with, like, you know, the New York Times obviously making this decree that their past decree is no longer their current decree, which is covering everything that has a theatrical. It's no longer guaranteed.
Oh, that went away?
It's no longer guaranteed, yeah. So, used to be if you had... You know, if you did a proper theatrical for a week and you had the right number of screenings, they would review your film. It's no longer the case. Because the number of films has increased so much that they just never envisioned that when they came up with that idea.
I'm going to assume that Audrey played a big part in that. Like, why are we writing...
Solipsistic of you to say that.
Why are we writing shitty reviews of a movie nobody's going to see? We should stop doing this whole thing.
Well, but they're doing a service to artists by doing that, by writing it. You know, because it's a help to artists, especially if it's a good review.
No,
and then they have this review, and it helps them with whatever. It's like a component to their arsenal of...
Don't let my joking think that, like, I'm not disappointed to hear that that's not true anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it doesn't mean that they won't review your film. Just, you need a proper distribution company behind you. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. If you're to increase the likelihood that you'll, I guess what I'm thinking is there are more of those films that four wall and that don't have maybe self distributing. Those types of people are probably less likely than they used to be. It doesn't mean they won't. It just means they're less likely. There's still other reviews, by the way. It's just that the New York Times had a particular cachet that none of the others has.
Yeah.
Well, nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you too.
For our first, second time. That's bizarre to me. We're going to go back, right? Like, if you're hearing this and you know you listen to Frank Ross on Filmwax Radio, please, please just write it.
Now I'd just be mortified that I repeated that.
Thank you.
This is the part now where I'm usually imploring people to go to iTunes. Do you have an iTunes account, Frank?
I do.
You have to have one. You're on iTunes.
Yeah.
You have at least a couple of, I'm sure Tiger Tail and Blue is on iTunes, right?
No, the only way to see my other films is Fandor.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm a big fan of Fandor.
I am too.
Yeah, they have some great films there. Go to Fandor.com. There is even a free trial period, so you can indulge yourself in Frank V. Ross movies. Which ones are on is Audrey, the train ride?
Audrey's on there, Quietly on By, Present Company, Hohokam, Tiger Tail, and Blue.
Oh, so almost your entire catalog.
Yeah. Yeah. My first two films are completely suppressed.
I get it. I understand. There's a special site for that, website for that, which... Only maybe three people have the login. And
yeah, right.
But you can go see Frank's last five. It sounds like about five of your films. On Fandor.com. And they do have I don't know if it's 2 weeks, but I think it's a 2-week free trial. So actually, I would recommend it.
Yeah, you could spend a lifetime on Fandor just watching all that stuff, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they have so many of these art films and horror from the 70s and 60s and 50s. You know, it's just like...
Well, you just had Sue Friedrich on, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, I remember mailing her a check and her mailing me VHSs of, like, Sink or Swim and all of her short films and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, and now they're just there.
And you have a login.
Huh?
They've given you, of course, Fandor gave you a login, right? So you can just...
No, I'm a member.
Yeah.
I pay.
You
I'm
do?
An adult.
You'd think that they would give you a login for streaming your films.
No, I think they need... I wouldn't ask for one even if they did.
No, you're classy. I do, because...
Yeah. That's
but no, I used to partner with them to some degree. They would sponsor an episode every month. So I had a login there. And I just did my last episode. I just had the director of content. It just went up the other day on Friday. The director of content at MUBI.
Oh, okay.
Which is a variation. You know, it's similar kinds of films that Fandor has. Only at any time they have 30 films available to watch.
Okay.
And every day one drops off and a new one is added.
Hmm.
It's like literally you have, it's a constant rotation of titles. But it's really cool.
Not really itch on your ass to watch the movies that you want to watch if they're going.
It's true, and you know, I don't know if you're like me, but you know, sometimes you come home late and you'll turn on a movie and you'll fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then you want to watch the second half, you know, rest the next day. If it's not available, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
And then there's now Filmstruck, of course.
Yeah, that was a big swing.
That was kind of a blow for Fandor and MUBI and those places because certainly for Hulu because. You know, they carried a lot of Criterion content, and now just Criterion's like, what do we need these guys for? We can do it on our own, you know?
Yeah.
I started this all to say, though, that I was asking if your movies were on iTunes, and I know that the new one, Bloomin' Mud Shuffle, it will be on iTunes shortly. So is this podcast, and so normally what I do here is I say, you know, if you have an account and you haven't yet gone to the FilmWax Radio podcast page, and give me a star rating or a review, shame on you. I castigate my listeners because it's a free service, you know?
Yeah.
And so the only thing I'm asking you to do is go there and just give me a nice little, because, you know, if there's enough there, eventually people will find it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
The star ratings really do help, huh?
Well, not like one or two, of course, but if everybody who listened gave me a star rating, it's possible that more people would start to discover the show because, yeah, you know, it joggles the, you know, the system in there and then the titles start to rise up, you know. So if you listen to another film-related podcast, if you like that one, you may like FilmWax Radio,
right.
In other words, you know.
So if you listen to this and you don't go give it a star rating, you're a dick.
Yes.
All right.
You know, and speaking of being a dick...
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. But, you know, I went into my WordPress site, let's put it that way, the back end, you know, to see how to make the show has explicit content. You know, there is profane language used on occasion.
Uh-huh.
And right now it says it's clean. And I went in and there, you know, there's a checkbox and I did check it a long time ago, apparently, that it is explicit, but it still says clean on the show. I don't know how to fix it. So if you're listening and you know how to fix this, please, please let me know. Cause I may have to look into this cause I don't want to get in trouble, you know, but there is, cause I think normally if you have a clean language show, you would not use profane language or you would bleep it out.
Yeah.
And I don't do that.
If you prefer to hear a beat version,
yeah,
right?
Yes, exactly. Or, you know, so I just want to make sure that I don't mind having an explicitly marked show because I don't think any kids would ever listen to the show regardless. You know, it's not like I'm losing people, but I may gain people, in fact. I may gain listeners, right? If they see that there's explicit.
Mean people or gain people?
Gain listeners if they see that it's an explicit show.
Yeah, I like swearing.
Yeah. And, you know, people may come in and think we're talking about dicks and other things. hey, do you mind doing my intros and outros every week with me?
No, I don't mind.
sounds like you have a little, well, actually, I was going to say, it sounds like you might have a little bit more time on your hands, but because you're not working in the food services industry anymore. But now, and then I realize in about a month, you're going to be a dad. So,
yeah, something.
You didn't mention the kid's name, but I guess, you know, in the Jewish religion, you're not supposed to even name the baby before it's born. Did you know about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You knew that. Okay.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. No. But oh. I'm saying that makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, it's a superstition.
Yeah, I'm pretty superstitious.
You are. But it, you know, you can pick and choose which things you're going to be superstitious about. It doesn't have to be giving your baby a name, but I guess they just felt that that was too on the nose or something, you know, in that, you know what I mean?
It feels like it should be bad luck. But also, you know, you want to meet. We want to be able to change our minds, which is why we're not really telling people.
Oh, I think that's smart. You know, it's funny you mention that because of my child's mother, she said forever because we knew it was a boy. Also, I don't know if you know, I have a 12-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he's training.
Does he still take karate?
Oh right, jiu-jitsu. No, he isn't. He's not. But and he's turning 13 shortly, actually, just a little after your child will be born. And anyway, he when we were pregnant with him, or she was pregnant with him, she was for months, she was like, well, it's a boy, you name him. I actually used a name that we had been talking about already. You know how you are when you're planning a family, you start to say, well, if it's a boy, we'll name them this, and if it's a girl, and you start coming up with the short lists, you know.
Yeah.
So we both agreed really early on about a name for the boy, and it was Henry.
Uh-huh.
Which I still think is a great name, and in fact, I think it was one of my grandfather's middle names. And anyway, so it's only a few weeks before, and she goes, his name is Jacob. And I was like, what? She goes, his name is Jacob. I said, what are you talking? You told me I could name our son. And so she goes, no, but his name is Jacob. She knew. She just, this is like, there's no arguing, you know. So his name is Jacob. And he is, in fact, the most Jacob of all Jacobs. He is a Jacob in and out, although he calls himself Jake. But he is a Jacob, and it was totally the right decision. So.
Oh, that's really cool.
I did give him a Jewish name, although it's you know, in Jewish religion, you also have a Jewish name. Which I'm sure you know. Anyway, so it's usually a couple of different parts because there's the father's name also. You like in the grandfather, in other words, it's almost like the thing where you know you get your own name and you take your father's name as a second Jewish name.
Okay.
And I can never remember what we named him. Oh, and no, I do. It was Israel.
Oh.
It's a Jewish name too.
Yeah, we love that name.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like Israel Horowitz.
Yeah, that's great.
There's no more Jewish a name than Israel Horowitz.
Yeah, no, that's like a punchline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for, like, Jew. That would be the most Jewish name if you could call someone Jew.
Jew.
Just, that's it. Anyway, you got me reminiscing, but it's an incredible time. So is Israel Ben Reuben is his name, because my Jewish name is Reuben, I guess.
Oh, okay.
You know, I didn't even know I had a Jewish name. But my father, one day, I'm in my 30s or 40s, you know, like, and I'm about to have the baby. And they come to me and they go, we found this in our papers, my parents, you know. And it was this Jewish birth certificate. I didn't even know I had one, never. And decades had gone by in my life. And all of a sudden I found out I actually had a Jewish name, that there was some sort of ceremony. And nobody ever told me.
Oh.
Because I was not sent to Hebrew school and I didn't have a bar mitzvah until I was 40. It's a long story. I'm not going to get into that. But
yeah, right.
And I'm not a religious person in any level. You know, I don't have any beliefs in that. But it is part of who I am, my identity, my family, my ancestors. So I'm curious. So I found out I had a, you know, official Jewish name. So it came as a surprise.
Oh, and it's a good one, too.
So I'm always calling my black Christian ex-wife and asking her, what's my Jewish name again?
That's funny.
Well, I look forward to seeing baby pictures.
You got it.
And I look forward to your next film, if and when that's going to happen. I mean, I don't know. That you should be superstitious about, so.
Yeah, definitely. Every time you get a good feeling about one, nothing happens.
You have a track record, so there's only reason to assume it will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best predictor.
Yeah, it's starting over from zero every time.
What about those investors that popped out of nowhere and dumped a bunch of dough on you last time for Bloomin' Mud Shuffle. Maybe they're still around.
Yeah, but I mean, people who invest in movies, you know, don't always have money. There's a lot of waiting around, right?
And that's true.
You can't be too greedy.
And you did mention before how you're feeling guilty and apologetic about how long it's taken for, like, you know, a typical film to make its way finally out there in the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you didn't even mention investors because, of course, you know, those are people that want to be paid back and they don't always get anything or they only get part of it. If not, in some lucky cases, they get everything plus maybe a dividend, you know? And
yeah. No, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, I do feel bad. Like, I feel like I underperformed or something. But they, when Factory 25 took it, they were happy. I'm in a kind of a lucky spot where the people who invested really liked the movie. So, you know, they're very patient, you know.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking weird. But it's nice. Oh, if you know the LLC that I opened for the, you know, my it's called Eventually Films.
Right.
And that was cuz I it was like a little joke. It's like, yeah, eventually.
Again, it's the based in tragedy, the humor.
The what?
Humor based in tragedy again, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this special episode. For those, again, we're going to refresh your memory. Frank V. Ross is the director. The name of the movie is Bloomin' Mud Shuffle, and it's opening in New York in Williamsburg. We are going to hold off on the name of the theater because it's down to two possibilities. Which are both around the corner from each other. So if you're in Williamsburg, you probably can figure it out. Although, actually, the Williamsburg Theater is actually within also walking a very close distance to. So there's actually three theaters. And if you count the spectacle, there's four right there. It's true. And the spectacle is a little storefront thing in what was once a deli.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, owner. He had a Manhattan theatrical, but they put the film in the spectacle. I don't know. I just don't understand it. It has like real stars in it too, you know.
Uh-huh.
I will say this about Catfight: it looks like $1 million.
Go check it out.
Go check it out. You know, on your fancy iTunes subscription there.
Yeah, on your iTunes.
Thank you, Frank, so much.
No, thanks, Ed. Your support means a lot to me, man. Thanks a lot.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yeah.